Hello, it's the Pain Points podcast from MindTools with me, Jonathan Hancock, and another terrific guest to help us unpick the problems and enjoy more of the pleasurable bits of working life. And this week, I join you live from 1987 with my pager ready to receive any urgent messages and my fax machine loaded up and beeping away to keep me fully in touch with the modern world. We'll never get any more connected than this. Well, we thought that, didn't we? Those of us who relied on fax machines to send and receive things back in the day. And okay, the world has moved on a bit since then, but a very recent project involved a resurgence of faxes when a group of people decided to use them in a new and surprising way. When 100 strangers agreed to share their answers to provocative questions every week, anonymously by fax, the Fax Club experiment was born, and it revealed some really brilliant stuff about communication, connection, and the sort of creativity that blossoms when we strip things back. Welcome to Pain Points. What happened in the Fax Club experiment? And look, here is a woman with a fax machine and someone who was in the thick of this project right from the start. Abby Buzzard, welcome to Pain Points. It's lovely to have you here.
Thanks, Jonathan. Great to be here.
And I hope you don't mind that we're using this newfangled internet thing to communicate with today.
Yeah.
Are you all right with such futuristic technology?
I'll try and keep up with it.
Okay.
But if I need to write something down and hold it up to the screen, I will do as well.
Yeah. Fair enough, fair enough. Well, take us right back to the start of this, because I think you were a fax fan already, but then this idea came in and it looks like it was just right up your street and too good to turn down.
Yeah, I think that something about the fax called across the years back to my teenage self. And I remember, unusually, we had a fax machine at home when I was a teenager.
Okay.
I don't know why.
Thanks, Lord.
But I used to fax my best friend's, my boyfriend, rather than, you know, this was when kind of maybe we were starting to email a little bit as well. I'm not that old, but somehow the appeal of receiving the actual words and the actual drawings through the ether rather than just, you know, the type really called to me.
Yes.
And when I saw the call out for people who wanted to join the Fax Club experiment, I got one of those kind of full body yeses that thought, well, it sounds crazy, but maybe I'll give it a go and see what happens.
Right. So you were just the sort of person they had in mind for this. Tell me about that idea there. Where did that come from? Who was contacting you?
There's a very fascinating, interesting and incredibly creative man called David Hyatt, who is the founder of the Do Lectures, among other businesses. And David is the kind of person who goes, I wonder what would happen if I did this. And a lot of people are like that, but then he goes off and try and does it, and then a lot of other people go, oh yeah, no, I could do that as well. And he's very good at starting these little fires, these little sparks of creativity, and seeing where they go, and they often go to really interesting places.
Yes.
And I think the Fax Club was one of those ideas. He said, I remember him saying it was an idea that kind of kept coming around to him and it just wouldn't die. So he was like, right, maybe it's meant to be, let's see what happens. And he put the call out to see if anybody would be crazy enough to buy a fax machine and join a year-long experiment. And it turns out 100 strangers were.
Yes. And that really shows commitment, because you said you used to have a fax machine. I guess you didn't have one anymore. You had to go and buy one, and everyone had to go and source a fax machine from somewhere, which can't have been that easy.
Yes, it was a hard club to join, not least because you had to go and find one of the ancient bits of kit. My fax machine now sits behind me on my desk. It's not plugged in at the moment. Yeah, going onto eBay, looking for fax machines, trying to find one that worked rather than was just a kind of museum piece.
Did you get some funny questions from people?
Well,
Why do you want a fax machine in 2020? Fine.
To be honest, I think people were really just happy that someone was going to buy one from them.
No questions asked.
Yeah, no, take it. And I found, you know, finding one with paper. And then it was lovely when mine arrived. There was a little card in it with a little note from the seller saying, happy faxing.
Oh, wow.
I've still got it somewhere.
So you knew you had to have a fax machine. What else did you know about this project at the start? How was it sold to you?
There were only 3 rules of Fax Club. So number one, we don't talk about Fax Club.
Oh dear, I think we might have broken that one.
Yeah,
already,
well, so. While we were in it. Number two was we don't talk about Fax Club. And number three was we do not follow. So the idea was we had to stay anonymous, certainly during the year. I think we're allowed to break a level of our anonymity now.
Good.
but we wouldn't know who else was involved in it. When we joined, we picked a number rather than a name. And the idea was We would get to know our fellow Facts Club members through the power of their ideas, their writing, their thoughts, rather than their profiles, you know, their status, the things that we knew about them. So a big kind of stipulation was that willingness to forego your identity for a year and also to not tell anybody else that you were doing it. So I managed to sneak my fax machine into the cupboard of doom where all the cables live in our house. And it was a long time actually before my husband found it, which probably, you know, tells you a lot about how often he goes to check the internet or whatever. But
did you have to explain that to him at that point and come clean?
I did.
A bit suspicious, secretly faxing from a cupboard.
Yes. I mean, I did have to say, yes, it's just a writing thing. And he was like, oh. And put it under those categories of those weird things my wife is doing that I don't know about from work in a cupboard. Yeah. It was this idea of kind of anonymity. You know, it was 52 questions. It was staying committed. We all knew that not everybody would stay the course and would do it and would keep going. And actually you kind of saw people dropping away as the time went on. But so there's something about that showing up for it every week and being the kind of person who finished something that started that also really appealed to me. Yes. So kind of a stubbornness.
And it's so interesting, right from the start, it's all about doing things differently. So let alone getting a fax machine in and doing all of that old-fashioned tech bit, but also, like you said, just not connecting with people and having to break habits that, you know, we all do these days. The moment you get introduced to somebody or you're about to be talking to someone, you have a look at them, don't you? And you find out some information. This kind of fixed one person's version or AI's version or whatever, you get something that you think is good information and you go from there. And this was saying, strip all of that away.
Yep.
And did it feel quite scary to do that, not to have those props?
Yes. I mean, I think we make sense of the world through the context and how we relate to other people and, you know, rightly and wrongly, actually, because it can have some real negative impacts on our kind of unconscious biases.
Yeah, you can dislike somebody, can't you? Just by connecting with them for a moment, having a look at what they post and making a decision about them that might not be very, very good or very true.
Exactly. And I think that was all stripped away. So then it was purely interacting with people's answers, people's ideas. And I guess then you can form a perspective of people and who they are and how they are a bit by how they write and what they say and what's important to them. But it felt very scary dropping that first kind of penny into the well and waiting to hear the splash and seeing what the response was. And, you know, quite vulnerable to kind of put your ideas out there without any of the credibility, I guess, that comes from your identity, but also quite liberating, I think, around actually, I don't have to impress. I don't have to live up to myself here. I can just say what I'm thinking. I can be really in the moment and respond in the moment.
Yes, it's harder to humble brag in this kind of scenario.
It's very tempting to go and find out something. We always feel like, I certainly almost feel like I should go and prepare myself to go and know something about someone. Yes. But actually, you know, I'm a coach and I find there's something about when it comes to connection, about stripping back all those preconceptions and all that, the old stories that become old the second we tell them and just being very much in the moment with someone and responding to the person that they are in that second that is actually, I think it's deeply comforting for people, even more so now with, you know, the internet follows us around with our, you know, what we thought about 20 years ago. You know, there's something very real about kind of being, I was going to say standing in front of someone, but I guess, you know, faxing a piece of paper across the ether to someone and just knowing what they're thinking or what they're responding in that very moment.
Yeah, that momentary aspect of it appeals to me. There must be a freedom in that and a kind of playfulness as well, because being anonymous, I guess you try on some different thoughts in that process and just see how it feels, see what the other person might respond to you if you just try this idea today.
And it's funny, you then start to build up your own context. So the first week, you don't know anybody, you don't know anything, you don't have any, you know, you just have a number. And, you know, hopefully there's someone else out there and it's not just you in a weird experiment with 99 chatbots or something.
Yeah, David is playing a really weird trick on you.
That would be very scary. But then I guess each week, because everyone's got their number, you start to build up a picture of the number and their responses and what resonates. And
right, so you do get to know them, you do get to build up a context, but you're starting fresh.
Yes, there's no external context. There's just what you experience of, and because these are people, well, I assume there were people I'd never met before. I didn't know when whether maybe there would have been some people I already knew who were involved in it, and I didn't find out until the end of the experiment. But there's something around that feeling for who you're, where you're, you resonate with different people's answers or perspectives, or where, you know. And I think there's something about learning your own truths a little bit when you're writing into an kind of an anonymous void. Yes. And you can try on things. It becomes almost, you stop, you're not trying to impress for any reason. It becomes kind of a search for something that just feels resonant for you as well.
Yes. Yes. And I wonder if it's an antidote to AI and the way we, even before AI, the way we search the internet. Often I think asking it to tell us the stuff that we wanted it to tell us. So, you know, especially with AI, you put a prompt in and it's very tempting to prompt to try and get something back. And then, okay, that's reassuring, or that will help me because that's what I thought I wanted to do anyway.
Yeah.
And this is different, isn't it? This is really opening up to whatever comes back from that fax machine.
And the questions, you know, so every Friday, 5 p.m, question would arrive via fax. And then the idea was you would sit with it and think about it and try and then try and answer it counterintuitively. So thinking about what instantly arose in you, or what the easy answer might be, what a different answer might be, what might be unexpected. It was a real process of kind of slow thinking as well as slow communication. It, you know, sitting with a question, and usually, you know, you would have a kind of weekish to sit with it and think about it. And there was like a built, almost like a built-in pause before sharing. And then you would read other people's answers. It's interesting, each, I think if you ask the kind of 32 people who are involved now around how they did it and what their processes were, everyone would have different approaches. But, you know, do you read other people's answers before you write your own? Or do you, the idea was to have your own answers kind of formulated, and then you learn from each other's answers as well. So, yeah.
And just slowing down, I wonder, almost that could have been the whole experiment, couldn't it? Let's just slow down and see how we think and interact differently and better because of that.
Yeah, I do really feel the pressure of the world to just be able to answer just so quickly to things. And so actually the practice of not the instant answer, sitting with it, you know, I would carry it around with me on a post-it or in a notebook, and some of the questions would really eat away at me and I wouldn't know the answer, and I would, you know, be overthinking them, and some would come really quickly and would just arrive fully formed when I sat down to write the answer. And there's just that, just not feeling like you have to answer the question as soon as it was asked. I feel like that is a practice that anyone can do.
You make me feel quite nostalgic. Now, I remember that world where you could be asked something and you weren't expected to answer straight away.
And it's less of a performance, I think, as well. Like there was less of that, you know, that element of needing to have the right answer as well was really stripped, because the whole point of it being counterintuitive and it being anonymous was actually there wasn't a right answer. There was you know, the encouragement was to be as creative as possible, to get as wrong as you could, really. And within that, kind of freedom came from that as well.
Yes. So what sort of questions did you discuss?
Oh, so there are a real mix. So some were work-focused questions, or so questions like, if you were only working for 3 hours a day and yet your work continued to grow even more successful, what would need to be different to how you work now? Was one of the questions, one of the early questions, I think. Some of the questions were almost kind of moral, or, you know, more philosophical questions, like under what circumstances, you know, are there any circumstances it's okay to lie? Or, you know, more personal questions around, you know, if you were to write a letter to someone and then you were to receive a reply from them, who would you write to, and what would you hope that they would reply back? So a real mix of, you know, everything from things that were very thought-provoking in terms of our working practices to some things that kind of really floored you.
Yes.
with the depth of them.
Yeah. And it sounds like you were practicing all sorts of communication skills, connection, thinking as well, lots of different thinking skills involved in that, exploring all sorts of areas of creativity. Did you also learn stuff about work and somehow kind of educate yourself or improve your awareness of things through the discussions that you had, aside from all the good brain stuff that was going on?
100%, because I feel like there's, on one hand, you're encouraged to dig deeper and think about your own ideas and challenge your own assumptions and do that. And, you know, my practice was, no, I'm going to think about this before I read anyone else's answer. I want to come up with the bones of what mine is. So I need to interrogate and reflect and understand that first. So there's that kind of self-excavation. And then the difference of perspectives, you know, 100 people, really different backgrounds, etc. Obviously, didn't know that at the time, you know, some seeking out counterintuitive answers. So kind of also deliberately pinging their ideas around like a pinball, it provoked some really different perspectives. And so there was something that in the practice of reading and thinking about it, I think it brings that, you know, when you're in a group with people, you want to have both that familiarity and that reassurance that it's not just you that feels like that, but also that tension of also holding a kind of, oh, I never would have thought about it from that perspective, or that surprise. And I feel like it really, every week it had that familiarity and then that tension of the difference as well that really created and expanded thinking much more broadly than if, you know, if I just journaled the answers to the questions, I'm sure I would have had some good depth, but it was understanding and reading and hearing and learning about other people's that really helped.
Yes. Were there any questions that didn't work? Maybe that flawed people or caused too much controversy?
I mean, there were answers to every questions every week. I think some people found some questions harder. And then there was a kind of an authenticity that came through. So people would say, well, I found this question difficult. Or I, you know, occasionally there was the odd question that was a bit like a challenge or an activity. So one was around, which actually really not flawed a lot of people, but made people feel uncomfortable. There was a question about going and asking for a discount for a coffee. Like, so, right, so you go to a coffee shop, ask for a discount, and then come back and tell us what happened. And, you know, the discomfort, I mean, that's a very British response, isn't it? And it wasn't an entirely British group, but that, like, some people couldn't do it. They were just like, I just can't bring myself to go and do that. And other people found the process of doing it really enlightening. And again, so there were a few where it was uncomfortable.
Yes, and that's the sort of question that maybe you wouldn't pick out if it was just on a list. You might think, actually, that's a fairly bland thing. I'll just, you know, pass through and we'll go on to the next one. But that was part of the surprise, I guess. You just didn't know how these questions were going to land and which ones would reveal such interesting stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And another one was about find a business that you respect or you want to, and write some advice to their founder or their, you know, and their. And so people, again, that was a week. I think a lot of people, there was a bit of kind of, not necessarily imposter syndrome, but people going, gosh, who am I to, like, is this, you know, this is uncomfortable. Should I do this? But it really challenged people. You know, another week was find someone with a completely different perspective to yours and immerse yourself in their world for a week. So listen to their podcasts, you know, read their newspapers, go and understand what's going on and what are the learnings that you have from that. So there was, you know, every so often there'd be a really active question that would, it was beyond just thinking about it. It required a level of doing.
Yeah. So maybe this is giving us some insight into how we get people to do things. You know, lots of us are in organizations like, you know, MindTools, your organization, which is about helping people to change their behaviors for the better and, you know, challenging them and hoping that they actually go out and try different things. And maybe this has lots of clues about how we can make that work by building these connections, by creating the playfulness, by stripping lots of things back and somehow letting all this good practice and this motivation and inspiration come through.
Yeah. And I think there was a sense of, which I think is really important for learning as well, there was a sense that there was no way to fail at it really, other than to not keep showing up. And even that in itself is probably is a big learning, right? But the idea was, you know, there wasn't a right answer. There isn't everything is a learning. Even, you know, someone who was like, I actually couldn't go and ask for the discount, or, you know, there was something in that that revealed something to them, or that they were able to write about and that caused or created a connection with other members of the group.
What about the impact after it had finished then? Have you changed any of the things you do? Or it sounds like you've changed the way you think about all sorts of things, but I wonder, is your life obviously different now because of being in this experiment?
Well, I think so. After 52 weeks, so there's a tipping point where you're like, yeah, no, I am going to finish this. Like, I've done this. Mm. Like, this is. And then we met in London back in February, those of us who were still going. So, you know, 100 at the start, 32, kind of coming through to the end. Yes.
And you said you'd wondered if maybe there would be somebody there that you knew. I'm dying to know, was there? Was your husband in there?
Yeah, he was like,
he'd been in another cupboard all this time.
My fax machine was upstairs. No, he wasn't there. There was actually, yes, I did recognise someone. So there was someone I had met at probably 7 years prior to that at the Do Lectures, which is David Hyatt's kind of event. Yes. And so, and then we connected there and been, you know, and had some amazing conversations. And then NCD kind of drifted apart, and then reconnecting with her then through this, and then has made, you know, has refreshed that connection. So that was pretty amazing. It was really scary walking into, you know, it's because I was a bit like, right, I'm going to this place, and you know, I was like, are they going there? Do I, you know, you're going in, am I in the right place? Do I, and it's a bit like everyone's going in.
Have I accidentally joined a cult?
Yeah, am I in a cult now? Is this what happened? But then, and then looking for particular numbers and trying to, you know, again, connecting people with their answers and thinking, oh, so you're so and so, or you're so and so.
That must have been really interesting. Did you get some big surprises when you thought, wow, you're Mr. 67325?
Yeah, it just, it was so weird to. And then when you overlay like what you know about people through their answers, through what how they live in the world, you know, where they are in the world, etc. I found that was a really amazing experience. And even now, so there are a few people through the process that I'd really, really connected with and really resonated with. And then a lot, you know, and then to meet them in person. And then I kind of carry now, I have like a list of people's numbers in my head that I know their answers, and I have a list of people, now I know people's names and faces, obviously, because I'm working with them this year. And then I've got a few who I know both of overlap. But then there are still people I'm still like, which number are you again? Yeah. I have to go and check. And it's really fascinating.
Yeah, it makes so you that think was about people in a different way.
Yeah,
different kind
yeah.
of networking. I love it.
And it did feel like, it wasn't like walking into a room with a bunch of strangers. You know, it was, you know things about the trust was there, the connection, and then the kind of joy about learning more about people and putting together their lives and their kind of placing them in the world, putting them into context. Yes. I think, I don't think you could live in an anonymous community forever. Yeah. I think there was such joy about then seeing people and coming together, and it created that level of trust. And then, and then since then, the challenge was, you know, are we going to make a book of this? So,
and
then,
you did.
And we have.
And it's been quite a hit.
Yay.
Yeah. So people can read all about it in the book. But what about those of us who maybe wish we'd been in the Fax Club experiment but weren't? We didn't get that call. Sadly, the first, maybe it'll be again, you never know. But the first time around, we weren't involved. But what can we learn from your experiences maybe that we could apply and benefit from it anyway?
I mean, I'm a big advocate anyway of the power of a great question. Mm-hmm. And I think Fax Club was about great questions, but not that not being the end point. It was then really listening to the answers and, you know, thinking about your own perspectives and your own answers, and then really connecting and understanding other people. So I think there's that making and the time and the space to ask questions, to listen to the answers, to think about your own answers. And I think that slowing down piece is really crucial. Yes. You know, the pace, a year is a long time, but the pace of it, you know, once a week, it's that showing up regularly. It was a commitment, but it wasn't an unbearable commitment. And there's something around that, whether it's finding a community and being a part of, you know, I'm a member of a book club in my village, and it's a, you know, it's very different to Fax Club. There's a lot more wine, but it is that regularity, that practice, that reason to get to know people and to connect over something that you all have an interest in, or Fax Club was people who were just crazy enough to buy a fax, and, you know, who maybe had an interest in writing or creative thinking or doing something ridiculous. But there's always these opportunities to find people who maybe aren't, you wouldn't connect with if you just saw their LinkedIn profile or whatever, but you find something you have in common, and you show up to that regularly, and that's where the relationships build, I think, unexpectedly.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so many useful lessons from this, as well as just lots of fun and interest reading it. It's a terrific book. It's called The Fax Club Experiment by The 32, which sounds wonderfully mysterious. And we know at least one of them now, Abby Buzzard. Yeah. We will link to the book and to Abby and her company and all of the other stuff that she does in the show notes. And I will add some related Mind Tools resources in there. Or maybe I'll just fax them all to the individual listeners. You never know. I'll see. I do love this idea of getting back into faxing. It was such good fun. So I will experiment myself with that later today. I'll see how I feel. But keep your pager on, Abby. I will be in touch again, I'm sure.
Amazing.
Because there's more, I'm sure, to come from the life and times of Abby Buzzard. But for now, for this week, from Abby and from me and the Fax Club experiment, that was Pain Points. And this is Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you.